Blog Talk Radio.
You've been gone.
Welcome to the Sankofa Repatriation Assistance Program. I'm your host, D. Ryan, and as always, we want to thank you for always tuning into the Sankofa Repat podcast. And as always, we're going to remind you of our mission here at the Sankofa Repatriation Assistance Program. Our main mission is to assist our brothers and sisters set up businesses on the African continent and to serve as a business incubator to ensure the success of those businesses. Please visit our website at sankofarepat.com. That is sankofarepat.com. And we want to invite you and ask that you do decide to be a monthly Patreon contributor in assisting us in getting to our mission much faster. We ask that you donate as little as $1 per month, and that will be able to assist us in setting up our brothers and sisters with businesses on the African continent. And we have seen where we've got a lot of support from our community. A lot more people are chipping in more than $1 per month, and we're very thankful for that. We want to encourage you to choose and decide to become a monthly Patreon contributor. Also, if you're only able to do just $1 per month, we are very appreciative of that, and we're very thankful. Again, our website is sankofarepat.com, and we want to give you our social media streams. On Twitter, we are Program Sankofa, and on Instagram, we're Sankofa Repatriation. Also on YouTube and Facebook, we're Sankofa Repatriation Assistance Program. Look us up and do follow us. That is where you'll get the latest updates. Also, on Facebook and YouTube, we're not able to go live, which we're very thankful for. And our very own sister Yaa has been doing a lot of live streams and having a lot of wonderful guests and some interesting content. So do subscribe to those platforms also. So today we're going to have a continuation of a previous program we have with our chief, Fode Mansoure, coming live out of Sierra Leone. Now, this is a very influential and very, very positive brother, and we'll be continuing our discussion on things that are happening in the Sierra Leone area and talk about life, business there, and currently the issue that we're all facing now. So we'll have that discussion. So again, do remember to subscribe to our social media streams where you can get all the updates from our organization. So we're going to see if we could bring on our guest now. Chief Fode, are you there? Okay, Chief Fode?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Can barely hear you. How are you doing? Okay, so it seems we might be having a little issue where I am not actually hearing Chief Fode. I'm not sure if he's hearing me. So hopefully he's able to come on very soon. So I'm just going to wait for give him an extra minute or so.
Hello, Alafia.
Okay, so it seems we have an early caller on the line instead of Chief Fode. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, brother. This is Baba Jamu Ogunleye.
Okay, how you doing, Baba?
Calling from the USA.
Cool.
This is the only way I'm able to listen to the show. I can't, for some reason, it doesn't play on my phone over the website.
Okay, I gotcha.
So
I called in. Yes, I do realize that.
A lot of people
calling and they're listening. Go ahead and give us your name again, Baba.
Baba Ajamu Ogunleye McLennan.
McLennan. Okay, great. Thank you.
Chief Elder of the Gullah Nation of North America.
Uh-huh.
And today is our international representative. And he's got a lot of connections over in Sierra Leone. Okay,
he's my nephew. Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure I caught him on the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I called in right when the show came on, 7 seconds before it came on. Okay. But
great. We're thankful for that.
Is he coming through?
Yes, he's here now. He's here now. I'm going to bring him on.
I share. Okay, man. Well, I was just checking to see if anybody could hear you. I can hear you. Just checking to see if you could hear anybody else. Okay, bro. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay. All right. Thank you, Baba. Also, want to thank you for, your nephew and all the wonderful work that he's doing. So
yes, he's
doing a lot of wonderful works on the gun, and we're very thankful for that.
Yeah, he's a special dude, man.
Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure our brothers and sisters there on the ground in Sierra Leone are very appreciative of what he's doing.
Yeah, one in a million.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're in a time now where we need real men to lead.
Yes, that is true.
You know, our youth. And he just turned 41, so he's just coming into true eldership as far as his age group.
So he's voluntarily taking
on the responsibility that comes with young eldership, which is still an activist state, you know.
Yes, that is true.
I'll be 64 this year, and I was an activist for a long time. But there's a point where you have to let young men take the lead.
That is true.
And it's that kind of protocol is something that's missing for our people in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm.
Now, what is good when we have an elder that we can look up to and take, you know, wisdom? So we're going to go ahead and I'm going to place you on so you could listen on the call.
I'll listen. I'm going to go ahead and mute myself.
Okay, great. So thank you very much, Baba. So we're going to move to... Chief Fode Mansore, who is on the ground in Sierra Leone and doing a lot of wonderful work. Chief Fode, how you doing?
Yeah, goodness, brother. How you doing, man? It's good to be back on.
Doing good. Nice to have you back again. I really appreciate you taking the time again. I know you have a busy schedule over there in Sierra Leone. Now, especially in these times, so we're very appreciative that you could take the time to come back on the show, share the information with us.
Yeah, man. You know, right now we're just on the third day of our first 3-day lockdown.
Okay, so
coronavirus.
Yes.
So, we haven't moved since Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, so it will be third and final day, right? I guess they're going to assess how everything's going and see if they need to extend, I take it?
Yeah, absolutely, man. There was some cracks in the armor, so to speak, in the way that the whole virus came about emerging within Sierra Leone. You know, the whole process to try to keep the virus at bay. And, you know, the resources that we had, you know, just the whole attitude within Sierra Leone, it just left us open in certain kind of ways.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so I think that's one of the first things we're going to, you know, focus on, get a little update on some current events, and then we're going to jump into some of the topics that we didn't get to discuss last time. So, First, can you just go ahead and give us some updates on the numbers and on the outlook on the virus in Sierra Leone? Chief Ode? Okay, so I think we just lost Chief Ode, so we're going to wait for him to join us back. The line was a bit choppy also, so we're just going to wait for Chief Ode to join us back, and then we could get into the updates of what's happening in Sierra Leone as it relates to the virus right now. So I'm going to try to pull up some information on some numbers that are floating around, because I think it's a very interesting topic that we discuss, you know, take a little time out of the show to discuss some of the numbers as it relates to the virus, because we're seeing where this thing is spreading a lot. So one of the main things we want to do is keep, you know, keep our family safe, keep ourselves safe, and also our worldwide brothers and sisters safe, because we really want to get to the other end of this virus and all of us be able to come out victorious. And that is what we pray for. So while we're waiting for Chief Ode to join us back, I have here. And if you share. Okay. So also, if you're listening, we know we have Baba on the line. You could also call in. Let us know if you have any questions or if you have any views you want to share with us. Do call in. Okay. So we have Chief back on the line. Hopefully we have a better connection this time and that he can hear us. Chief.
Yeah,
Ode,
hopefully so. Yes, I'm here, Brother Duane. How you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Great, great, great. Okay, so what I was trying to do a while ago was trying to get an update of the numbers of our brothers and sisters in Sierra Leone that are affected by the virus, or let's say tested positive for the virus, and what is the outlook over the next couple of days with regards to the lockdown that is currently going on.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the best way to answer that, honestly, is that what has been reported is that we have 6 cases now. And mm-hmm. those 6 cases emerged over the last week. And so the suspicion is that there have been cases and that it's lingering, but the testing hasn't been up to par or up to speed. And so I know that the government is doing some tracking people who came into the country, who went through the 14-day quarantine and then were released without being tested. And the thing is that some people don't show symptoms. And we don't know this thing well enough to know if 14 days is even enough. We're just going based off neuroscience, basically. We don't know. And and so a lot of people could have been put at risk. Last I checked, it was about 311 people who had entered the country throughout the coronavirus period. We're over 700 now is what they're saying. And so there's only 6 official cases. And what has happened is that they've locked us down from Sunday to tomorrow. Just to kind of like chase those contacts down, try to recheck people and things like that. So they're basically playing catch up, you know. Somebody spilled
yeah.
the milk.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to clean it up. And so at the end of the day, we don't know what the future is going to look like in terms of lockdown. But I will say that the attitude towards lockdown has been very different for different people. You know, people who definitely just want to see the country safe. You know, we all just say, man, just lock in and don't do anything. Just lock in until they figure it out. But the masses of the people really, here we live hand to mouth and day to day.
Yeah.
So when you take 3 days from someone working in the market, I mean, person is worried about dying from hunger more than they think about dying from coronavirus. highly. And then we have water crisis here in this country every year. We really shouldn't. You know, more rain falls here than most places in the world, but we haven't advanced the technology to capture and process our own rain. And so it's like we're so behind in so many ways, and we suffer from it. So right now it's a water crisis. Every year from May, from March to about May, we suffer here. And so even while we have to be clean and wash our hands, there's less access to water. And so, you know, people are very confused. But right now, if you look at the photos that's up on the Freetown City Council site on Facebook, what you see is that everybody honored the law. Nobody went outside. Nobody went out on the street. So Freetown looked like a ghost town for the last 3 days. And so that's just to show you that the people are going to obey the statutes and the laws that's being imposed. We've been here before to Ebola. We understand that it can be playful at first. People are going to talk a lot of conspiracy theories, but when bodies start dropping, we know how to behave. And so I'm pretty confident that we're going to be able to knock it out.
Yep. And I'm very thankful that you're reporting that most of the citizens in Sierra Leone are actually adhering to the policies that are laid out, you know, just to keep everyone safe, which I must, give a thumbs up to my people. We do obey the law, and we are law-abiding citizens as to the contrary that most people want to portray. So also I want to get your views, Chief Fode, on some topics that are in the news now, so we could clear these out the way. Now, recently there are two doctors in France that are openly discussing testing in France, and we see a lot of our people have come out against that. We have major football players, and you know, everyone else on the internet is saying, you know, how is this possible? We do know that stuff like this exists today, but a lot of people have come out against it. So what are your views on that?
Well, let me just say, I stand completely against any vaccines being imposed on any Africans anywhere, not just in Africa. And they do it anyway. They've been doing this. And, you know, sometimes things happen that are so shocking. You know, it should just tell you how bold the white supremacist world is right now, to even be live like that with it. You know, it's just letting you know that, you know, the guns are out. The guns are out. We are locked into a war for our survival. And we ain't talking about rifles no more. Now we talk about needles. You know, now we're talking about, you know, billionaires who don't give a damn how many of us die. You understand? And it's a whole different force, you know, emerging in this in this century that is scary. But I can tell you that during Ebola in Guinea, they sent a team of people to go sensitize some of the people way out in the village. And they killed the whole team, the Africans, the people in Guinea. They killed the whole team because they were afraid. They said, yo, you're the one bringing it here. Like, you're coming to tell us about Ebola, but you're the one bringing it here. And they killed everybody. Yeah. And they popped their bodies up in the latrine. It was like 13 or 14 people, and you know, there was an outcry about it. And then just yesterday, in Ivory Coast, in a place where they was developing a treatment center for this coronavirus, you know, some youth rose up, some of the people rose up and burnt it down to the ground. So I think that we have to look forward to more of that kind of stiff resistance, because I mean, they've masked off on us. You know, there's nothing to hide. It's all open. 2020 is the year of vision. You know, so all we really can do is, you know, realize that we've just been sucker punched. You know, we had our guard down. We didn't think they had the balls to do it. But here we are again. And this time, it's impacting the whole world. And they're actually global chess. Yeah, man, they're playing global chess with us, man. We're just pawns. We're just in the middle. You know, casualties. Yeah. And, you know, it's hurting me because at the end of the day, we don't have any visible, vocal leadership that can really represent all of us globally at this time. And we're suffering because of that.
Yeah, and that's very troubling.
Yeah, it's very troubling, man, because now we have to rely on celebrities, footballers, mm-hmm. and rappers to say the bold statements, you know, and then they sound stupid most of the time because they're not really educated on the thing. It's just mm-hmm. working with emotions, so it just feeds right into the white man's plan that they will have emotionally driven people who are very uninformed and unexperienced in the field who will be the mm-hmm. ones that would make the bold statements and things like that. So I think the whole struggle is being celebritized, and you know, I think we're just in deep waters right now, man. But when it's a tough time, but this is the time that really produces the leaders that we've been summoning. You know, we just have to really work together and really break down the barriers. Except the fact that we're divided for now, but work towards a more diverse strategy. Accept it and move forward.
Yes, the key thing in what you're saying is that we've got to work together. We really have to get our people to start working together. Now, I realize that you're saying a couple of youth have taken action in Ivory Coast, and I want to remind our people that the power really does lie within the people. The power does lie within us. If we don't want a thing that's going to be have an adverse effect on us, we have the power to get rid of it. So I really want to remind our people that, hey, we still do have the power. And we're seeing where a lot of our people are rising up, that are being meted out to us, even up until this day. And also, I see, and I hope this will evolve into, you know, a worldwide cry for us to even come together on these common issues a lot more. Do you see that happening?
Well, let me just say that it's always happening. I think there's always people mm-hmm. out there pushing the struggle forward. But what mm-hmm. I do think is that the masses of people have been impacted by this. Usually this would be something that would be on a smaller scale, and those who are politically educated or those who are activists would know it, but the masses of people wouldn't know it. But I'm able to talk to even my still sleep, backwards acting and living family members about this. And I'm able to educate them through this.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is a time to awaken those closest to us, since we got to be isolated anyway. You know, let's push our consciousness forward, because, you know, this is a time to act. This ain't a time to debate and research. This is a time to act. This is a time for action, man. And, what I will do is I will cry out to those who are not activists, are not organizers, but mm-hmm. benefit from those who are activists and organizers to start supporting the organizers. Because instead of supporting the activists, because at the end of the day, it's those who engage the enemy constantly, whether it's against the health disasters, whether it's against the educational disasters. You know, we don't have disaster management. Those who actually try to manage our disasters for us, we have to really identify these people. And as you look around your neighborhood, you're going to find a couple, because there's so many people that's actually trying to do something, and we don't have any cohesiveness. We need cohesiveness. And so, I always say support those who's riding for the cause at the end of the day. You know, people who's putting it all on the line and making it happen, because just like we can talk about the people in Ivory Coast, who has risen up. You know, we're not talking about bailing them out if they're in prison. We're not talking about the other side of this. You know, some of us want Africa to do, Africans in Africa to do something that they wouldn't do if they were here.
Yeah.
You understand? And I think that's hypocritical. And then the people, when they do rise up, they don't get the support from the diaspora that they need. And even from the native diaspora, those who are born here and go out, they don't support these struggles on the ground properly. And at the end of the day, it's like no one can really understand the kind of magnitude, you know, of influence that we can have when we intervene, you know, when we step up and say, you know what, family first, Africa only. You understand? Mm-hmm. Like, that's where we at with this. Let's unify and let's crucify enemies. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So true. I do believe this it's coming together. I see it. I see it happening. So let's press forward in bringing our people together and working together. So we did talk about the testing in African continents earlier. You're on the ground. I want you to give us an account of the medical professions in Sierra Leone. What are their stance on it from the Ministry of Health there? Have anyone spoken out against it?
Well, I mean, there was no public statement about no testing happening here.
Okay.
You know, I know that they had a laboratory here before Ebola that was established through, of course, Bill Melinda Gates was part of, was involved in that. And so I know that they do have a base of operations in the country in some way or somehow, but I'm not sure of how. But at the end of the day, man, look, I'm shook. That's what I'm going to say. I'm shook because there's so many underlying issues that have nothing to do with coronavirus that this creates. And and there's so many antagonisms and underlying struggles just day to day already. And then this just makes everything worse, you know. And so it's really unpredictable, man. I just got faith in the people because we tough out here. You know, we've been through the Civil War. You know, we've been through Ebola. So the people kind of know when it's emergency time. And we have those among us who know how to swing into action. Now, in terms of the medical situation, like you was asking, man, it's a very bad situation. I know that the government has bought some ventilators, and I think they're waiting for them to come. But there was only one originally in the whole country. And so imagine 7 million people, one ventilator. Coronavirus breaks out.
Wow.
And so just imagine, bro. And then just to let you know how these imperialists are taking advantage of African countries in this situation, I believe that this government just got awarded like $12.4 million of loan from the IMF. This is going to put the country in more debt. You know, that's all they're going to
do.
And then they understand that corruption is at an all-time high in Africa. You understand? And at the end of the day, how much of those resources is really going to be used for what it's supposed to be used for? So at the end of the day, we burden the payment because it's the money that the people are going to feed back to the system that's going to go back to the World Bank. But we ain't going to get the services that we deserve out of the money. And so it's a different, complex situation over here when you're in Africa. And the government is African. You know, the police is African, the president is African, the parliament is African, everybody's African. And you get to see how the politics and the economics flows back and forth, and then you can juxtapose it with how the politics is in the diaspora, particularly in America. And let me just tell you, bro, it's one imperialist colonial system, and no matter how you cut it, we have some very serious, treacherous Africans among us who continue to betray and the system continues to make them stronger and reward them. And so the pressure at the grassroots is so intense. The people just go along to get along about right now, man, we really beat down a lot. And that's why I said it's really a time for us to have visible leaders, man. Like, I don't understand this at all. Let me tell you something, man. There's so much that we could have already prepared for long before this. You know, people talking about how we responded to other issues, Hurricane Katrina and this and that. But we're never prepared, man. We don't do anything to prepare as a nation, as a whole group of people. And I'm not talking about ethnic African American. I'm talking about you African in the United States of America. We need to unify. I know so many Africans from different countries and ethnicities, and they kind of live in their own world unless you reach out to them. And I feel like if you have African Americans in the United States who've been there for 100 years, then we need to be the kind of host that we expect when we go home.
Yeah.
And begin to develop that family relationship. because only through us will we go before or will we go forward. And at the end of the day, we know now that we really have no friends. You know,
yep.
Dr. John Henry Clark was correct. The African has no friends.
So
we ain't got no friends, man.
Mm-mm.
So it's not about being nice and being kind and being friendly. It ain't about that. It's about being serious and putting us first.
So I want to jump to a recent issue that I see popping up. There are reports coming out of China of racist statements against Africans living in China. They were asked to quarantine unreasonably. They're being kicked out of hotels, not having anywhere to stay, not being allowed to enter stores. People are being told that no foreigners are allowed, which is just open the discrimination against our brothers and sisters in China right now. Have you heard anything like that? And what would be your thoughts on that? I wanted to speak to the fact that does that point to the need for us to have our, you know, our power base in Africa, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Most people who go to China go there for trade, education, or something like that. They're usually expats there. And everybody who I know who is honest about China will tell you that shit is a whole nother racist nation situation. And we know that. We know that from the ghetto in America. You know, you know Chinese people. They sell us most of their cheap-ass goods. And we buy them. You know, we're consumers. And so that same stink is all around the world. So I'm not surprised at all. Some people have been saying, well, the Chinese are the lesser of evils. And, you know, been giving them a good word based on their revolutionary past. But these Chinese people we're dealing with in 2020, they're a different breed. And they are fighting for world domination. And, and they control the industrial sector of the world economy. And so it is a very serious thing, because if you control the industrial center of the world, then you're most dependent on African resources. Mm-hmm. And so you need our raw minerals.
Yeah.
You need them because you got the factories. It used to be in America that, you know, our ancestors moved all the way up north just to get jobs in factories that no longer exist.
Yeah.
All of that has been outsourced to China, outsourced to India. And so the global economy has been shifting, you know, for years now, for decades now. It's always shifting. And so I think that whenever you have that happening, man, we're going to see people get stronger, and then they're going to show their true colors. They're going to show their true colors right in front of everybody. And I've heard so many stories about how Chinese people treat Africans in China, and I've seen how Chinese people treat Africans in Africa too. You understand? And it's not.
Yep.
It ain't no different than how it is when you go to a Chinatown and they, you know, they look at you like you stink. They look at you like you dirty. It ain't no different, man. They got the same nasty attitude as the Lebanese, the same nasty attitude as the Arabs, same nasty attitude as the Indian. I'm telling you, Africans ain't got no friends.
Yeah.
We ain't got no friends.
Yep. And it's time more people start realizing this. And, you know, I really do appreciate all my brothers and sisters all over the world, even more so the ones that are awoke and know what's happening and seeking to enlighten our people and to move us forward. And one of the main things is that, you know, we just want to be left alone to prosper on our own, you know. But even that itself is a struggle at times. So we see even here in the diaspora, a lot of our people are people being disproportionately dying from the coronavirus. Can you give us your take on that?
Yeah, man. You know, it's breaking my heart, man. Because I know that it shouldn't be like that for us. And I can just imagine, you know, just the horror stories of going to the hospital regularly. You know what I'm saying? I can imagine how they're treating our people right now. in them, the ERs and in the hospitals and shit. So for me, it's like, yo, like my heart is bleeding. I don't know what to do. It's hurting me because people who I know are being infected and we're all being affected by it.
Yeah.
You know, my son is still working through this. You understand? And I'm like,
oh, wow.
You know, he got a newborn son, so he's thinking, yo, I gotta work.
Yeah.
I gotta work. So
wow.
So just imagine, man. Friends of mine, you know, Pan-Africanist, kind of sick.
Yeah.
And recovered. People who were saying, you know, this ain't that serious, you know, get you some herbs and, you know, drink you some potion and you're gonna be all right. And, you know, pray 100 times and thank Jesus and all that, all them other advice. They quiet now. They quiet now, man. I just seen an article where the majority of the people infected and dying in Chicago is us.
Yep.
Us. And then I'm thinking about the fact that it's attacking people with compromised immune systems. Thinking about the actual conditions of Chicago and how, you know, the industrial era must have impacted so many of our bodies, and how many of us inherited deficient bodies because of that asthma, things like this, and so now it's going to attack us unfairly. And so we have to understand that all of the problems that we're facing, all of them, they start with one ideal, that the white man is superior. And once the white man's belief that he is superior is the source of all of the misery that we have suffered for hundreds of years. And it's time to put that book in its place. When I say book, I mean white man. Put him in his place. Put him in his place. And so if we don't understand when it's time to fight, we don't understand when it's time to love each other. We don't understand when it's time to say, hey, man, look, man, I'm sorry for all the differences and that little squabble a couple of years ago. How are we going to feed these communities we live in? How are we going to secure ourselves if they start acting crazy?
Yeah.
What's up?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what our ancestors will want us to do, and that's what our descendants need us to do.
Oh, yeah, because I heard you just mention, you know, we need to put petty squabbles aside. Because in reading a book recently, The Destruction of the Black Civilization by Chancellor Williams, he spoke of, you know, there's an innate issue with us. We are not quick to forgive our brothers and sisters for petty things. We would hold them in contempt for long periods of time. But at the jump, we're just quick to forgive others. And I don't get it. We need to move past petty squabbles and look at the main issue, the bigger picture at hand.
Yeah, we have to mature.
We
have to do what hasn't been done yet. And, it's a great challenge, man. It keeps me motivated, actually, because in life, man, we just got to figure out our own contribution, our own purpose, and just try to make.
Chief? Okay, let's see if we do still have Chief Fode online. I think we just lost him, so we're going to wait for him to join us back. But just to pick up on what the Chief was just talking about a while ago, I do think there is a need for our people to realize with what we face now, I hope we'll realize that, you know, at the end of the day, who's going to have your back most? Who's going to be looking out for you the most, you know? And choose to build up our communities, you know, build up our own resources, build up our own facilities, and strengthen one another. And this has nothing to do with anybody else. This has nothing to do with being against anyone else. It's at the end of the day, the true realization is who is going to stand with you, you know, and that's what we're faced with. And we got to realize that sooner than later. So we're going to wait for Chief Fode to join us back to continue this discussion. I see we do have one caller online. We do from time to time have our callers that call in just to listen on the phone. Let's check if that's the case here. So, caller, you are on. Let us know if you have a question or if you want to share some views with us. That's phone number ending in 7815. You are on. Okay, so that very well might be one of our listeners just listening on the phone. So we're going to wait for Chief Fode to join us back. Hey, Chief Fode, you're on. Again, we just lost you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, you're on. I can hear you.
I had to call back in. Yeah,
okay.
I had to call back in. This
not a problem.
Not as strong as.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we're still on the 3G. You know, we're still on the 3G over here. We didn't even graduate to the 4G yet.
Yeah. You know what? Let's stay right there. Let's stay right there for now on the 3G. See, I'm pretty sure as far as communication goes, there are a lot of technologies that we can come up with that is not as detrimental to our health for some financial gains. I'm pretty sure we are going to come up with that because we shouldn't have to be suffering lives for financial gains.
Bro, we have too many scientists. We have too many engineers. We have too many trained professionals that suffer their whole lives giving their skills to our enemy. We have too much already. We have too much potential. And we're not realizing it because of this mental block that we have that keeps us away from Africa for all kinds of reasons. Everybody got a reason, bro.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's not always poverty. You know, I'm not rich. Yeah. Other people coming and going right now ain't rich. They just know how to plan and make network and make moves. It's really, you know, not that complicated today, man. We really don't have the excuse that our ancestors had.
Wow. Okay. So, last time we were talking, I think we left off at the point where we're talking about the port or the market. King Jimmy as having the port of return. So we had talked about that, and you had talked about the community disaster committee that is set up there. I think that's where we left off. So we could pick it up there, or we could just continue it from anywhere you want to start from. Let's talk about the disaster committee, community disaster committee that you had mentioned on the last call. How is that going? Are they springing into action now?
Well, right now it's very difficult to spring into action because the way we
lockdown.
Yeah, lockdown. Yeah, but let me just give you the full report so you understand. We have what you call community disaster management committees. And they first came about because the NGOs who were helping during Ebola, they began to organize these because there's not a disaster management infrastructure available to people in this country. Like most people, like right now, if I fall down and I break my leg, it's going to be hell just to get me to the closest hospital, and I live in the city.
Yeah.
You know, because the roads are bad, there's no ambulance system, you don't call 911 and they come running to the rescue, none of that is there. No security or emergency system is there. And so they begin to create these community disaster management committees, which are organized at the grassroots level within the communities, and what they do is they basically prepare the ground for flood season. They also engage in things like environmental improvement, like tree planting, nursing trees, and things like that. They do a lot of training as well in first aid, firefighting, things like that. So that's what a CDMC is, quote unquote. So these CDMCs have been developing over the last 5 years. Interesting because they're classified as what they call CIGs, Common Initiative Groups. And a common initiative group is an informal organization, basically of people. They're not registered. They don't have bank accounts. They're actually the people in the community who self-organize themselves into these committees. And, and when they do that, then they're able to get help from the different NGOs that facilitate training. And so we, the Gullah Redemption Mission in Sierra Leone, we're a nonprofit company with limited guarantee of membership. We have international membership. We have members there in America, you know. And so our goal is to function not as an NGO. See, an NGO will empower you with training and things like that, but they won't empower you with sustainability. And they won't come down into the grassroots and actually serve with you. You know, they arm you with enough training to keep their grants coming, you know, so they can pay their own executive staff. And at the end of the day, the little bit that's left for the people is what they might get. And so it creates the conditions for corruption. People begin to steal the little money that they can get. So these are some of the problems that happen from NGOs not being able to build native-based entities that the people will control. And so the Gullah Redemption Mission is a native-based entity that's incorporated under the Republic of Sierra Leone and is in the hands of the people. And so we don't work as an NGO. That's why I say nonprofit company. And so like an NGO, though, our job is to arm the people with skills, talents, education, opportunities. And so one of the things that we've been doing for the last few years here is reaching out to the community with what we call the Be Clean campaign, because cleanliness is the number one preventer for the majority of the sicknesses that we suffer here. And so whether it's coronavirus or Ebola or not, we suffer from other sicks here, just in this region alone. And so you know, we've been promoting hygiene and sanitation, organizing community cleanups. And so we incorporated our company back on July 4th, 2019. And so we started our first initiative with King Jimmy and Government WAF. Why? Mm-hmm. Because the Be Clean campaign now, instead of just training people on basic emergency and sanitation and hygiene, we now wanted to take it into the element of cultural heritage connectocracy, basically meaning that we want to connect our activities to educating people and also taking care of some of the historic sites that aren't being taken care of. And so the main one that stuck out to us, because we have membership that lived there, was King Jimmy. And we say King Jimmy and Government WAF, which is two different neighborhoods, but they share the same historical territory. And so we chose to go down there. And what we plan to do is build a CDMC, Community Disaster Management Committee, under the Gullah Redemption Mission in Sierra Leone within those two communities. And we have over 150 members registered there under our community-based organization. And we're basically in the process of pushing that initiative forward now, but this coronavirus thing it really throws a wrench at us. So what we plan to do now is really to go hard with the Be Clean campaign. What we're planning to do right now is to establish hand washing centers in all the different areas where we have community organizers established. That way, at least in those little areas where we have high traffic in our own neighborhoods, in our own areas where we already service, people will have additional opportunity to wash their hands on a daily basis. So we want to build these hand washing centers. Once we finalize our budget for one, then we're going to be reaching out to you guys to see who can help us sponsor some more. Because the more that we can establish, the safer our people would be. You know, just the constant awareness of seeing people washing their hands is going to help us beat this thing. And so we want to play our part. Of course, we'll put banners up. You know, we'll do a little jingle and have it on play on some sets. We have volunteers ready to serve the community. And so that's where we're at right now. What we plan to do is actually do fire training as well as emergency response training. But coronavirus has took us off of our plans, and now we're just trying to establish.
Yeah, I can just imagine.
Yeah, now we're trying to do these cleaning centers, and we're also doing some agricultural work as well, man. Last month, the company was granted access for development of 50 acres of land. That 50 acres of land is part of a larger 500 acres of land that is totally available. The project is to increase food security as well as cash crop sustainability for the villagers of Magboya, which is located in northern Sierra Leone. And so we've already begun doing our brush in there to do groundnuts. We plan to do 10 acres of groundnuts, 10 acres of cassava, and 30 acres of rice. That's our plan for this 50 acres. We already began with the groundnut preparations. And so we also have access to another project that we're developing with one of our international members who serves as our chief advisor, a brother named Daniel Demoujian. He himself is a Creole brother, but he happened to be born in New York City, and he actually lives in Atlanta. But he has land here. He has an acre and a half of land that's very, very, very preserved, I would say. They still have fruit trees and greenery in the heart of the city. So his father was a botanist. His father was a botanist, and so he has a dream to do like a African diaspora temporary stay village. And so we've partnered up with the company to develop his land. Right now, we're doing an urban farm on that land, and we're preparing to build what we're going to call the Gullah House, which will be our international headquarters for the entire movement, which includes the Gullah Nation of North America. It includes the Black Star Action Network International. It includes the UNIAACL. There's various entities that's involved in this one process. We're all trying to back up Gullah Redemption Mission in Sierra Leone because, in reality, we have over 200 members, and we've been organizing and preparing the ground for repatriation, for investment, and for tourism. We also have a travel agency license. So we're ready to embark in tourism. We're already doing agriculture, and we're developing a retreat center for our African diaspora brothers and sisters when they come, right in the heart of Freetown, where we're going to offer Airbnb, tours, all kinds of things for the people out there. So just to economize the programming in a way that it feeds itself, to take lessons from the ancestors, really apply it. That's how we're really developing out here, man. So just to let you know, although coronavirus is here, we're still farming because our people have to feed ourselves. Last year, Sierra Leone imported over $250 million of rice. From out of Sierra Leone. And so for us just to be able to grow 30 acres, man, it feels good. It feels like at least we're shooting back. At least we return the fire. The more rice we grow, the less dependent we will be on imports. And so we're fighting the economic struggle as well.
And you did mention, building up these hand sanitization facilities. So whenever you're ready, please do reach out to us. We'll send the word out to the community. We'll send funds. We'll do whatever we have to do to help the mission. And that is what we should feel proud about doing as a community, because if we do help one of our brothers, our sister in Sierra Leone, we're pretty much helping ourselves. We're making we're building us as a community. That's what I want our people to see. So whenever you're ready, reach out to us. Give us. Would that be the same as the last GoFundMe that you mentioned the last time?
Yeah, I can give you the information right now again if you like.
Go ahead. Yes.
The GoFundMe information is gofundme.com/gullah-redemption-mission-development.fundraiser.
Okay. So I do have that address, and I will definitely put it on within the show notes. So anyone listening, The last time, the last time we had our show, I did winter and I donated. And I'm going to donate again. So I want to encourage our people to do the same.
Yeah, man. I wanted to thank you for that as well, man. I appreciate it, man. Truly, every little bit counts.
Yes. So,
the price for everything has gone up here. It's not like America where you have control over trade. This economy doesn't have a controlled market. And so people are just picking prices up and every little bit because we still got a mission to accomplish.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Great, great, great. So you did mention also about the farming projects that you have took on. You took on an initial 50 acres, and you mentioned there's that's out of 500 acres. Now, is that an opportunity for someone listening from the diaspora to partner up with you to try to farm some of this land? Is that a possibility?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, the thing is that, just to give you a background on the village hasn't had any kind of attention from the outside world for a long time. And the brother who introduced us to the people there, he's our chairman. He's the chairman for the Gullah Redemption Mission of Sierra Leone, a brother named Alamani Bangora. And he's actually born, he's the son of the soil. He was born there. And his grandfather was the original holder of that land. And there's actually more land. There's about 7 miles of land total, whereas it's like bush. You know, people haven't done anything with it. You know, it hasn't been farmed, it hasn't been settled. But this 500 acres is the size of the land that has already been cultivated in the past, but it hasn't been cultivated in years. And so we're actually going to be doing what we call our Tools and Seeds Farmers Assistance Program, whereas we reach out to rural agricultural villages, people who basically rely on farming for sustainability, and whereas they have numbers where they're very low. You might have 30, 40 people, you know, living on 5 miles of land, and you say, wow, they don't even have tools, and they don't even have seeds. Like, what's going on? And so we want to go out to them deprived communities and reach out to them and try to develop a system of relationship where we're able to help them, one, with food security, help the people produce more food for themselves. It's not a business investment, you know.
Okay.
But then at the same time, there is an element of business involved. Being a nonprofit company allows us to involve in for-profit ventures as long as they're socially, economically tied. And so what we're doing in the village by bringing food security opens up the door for cash crop sustainability. And that opens up the door for potential investments and things like that. What we would like is access to seeds, a diversity of seeds. You know, we have some of the richest soil in the world in Sierra Leone, and there's so much that could be exchanged between the agricultural community here and agricultural community in the diaspora, and we can co-produce things. And so I know that in the future, what we plan to do with more of with the rest of the land, because like I said, this is 50 acres, but there's 500 acres total. On the rest of that 450 acres, we want to be able to economize it, basically commercialize it as well. Have a way where we can lease plots and have crops grown and shipped to people who actually prepay for them to be farmed. Have a system where people are guaranteed that their investment is not a dud, that there's actually going to be a tangible, transparent process of accountability step by step. So my philosophy is that if nonprofit is the right hand, then for-profit is the left hand, or vice versa. You have to have a double approach. The first thing is that our priority is food security for the people. Our priority is being able to create a situation where the village can generate more resources at the market through cash crop farming. And that will help the village to be able to sustain itself socially, because there's no lights in the village. Because the school has four rooms, and one of the rooms roof has already caved in, you know, and the mm-hmm. village needs social economic development. And so that's
yeah.
what our goal is. And, of course, there mm-hmm. will be business involved. And as soon as we figure that part out, it will be open to the diaspora. And there's many, many business opportunities that we can try to organize in a cooperative sense in Sierra Leone. And agriculture mm-hmm. is one of them. There's so many superfoods that we want in America that can easily be grown here. I mean, if you listen to what I just said, with 50 people living on 5 square miles, and they don't even have tools and season, and we come and we can be able to help the people first with food security and cash
yeah.
crop sustainability, then we're
yeah.
able to then talk, then we're able to have a different kind of talk with the people.
Yeah.
We're able to say, hey, man, look, you know, I got some people coming, man. We're looking for land to buy. Can
mm-hmm.
we share? Can we share this community with you? Because you have to make your investment. So I always believe in coming correct. Some people
mm-hmm.
are coming back like, yo, like, yo, sell me your ancestors' land.
Yeah.
And people don't understand it. People don't understand
mm-hmm.
it. You know, most of the land in Africa is available for developmental purposes. If you come
yeah.
correct, legally and legitimate, then it's not a long conversation when you're able to actually do what it is that you promise the communities you're going to do. Oftentimes,
mm-hmm.
people come and they gain from the community, especially companies. They come and they might buy up a whole bunch of land or lease a whole bunch of land and grow a whole bunch of cocoa or cassava or rice. And then at the end of the day, the relationship with the community is not one that the community actually benefits from socially, economically. Some people might
uh-huh.
get paid for their labor, but the community as a whole does not benefit from the land that they actually hold as a community. And so there is so much corruption and exploitation involved at the grassroots when we're talking about actually trying to reach our people to create a better
mm-hmm.
situation. You know, Freetown has 2 million people, and Freetown is only one city, and it's not built for this many people. And so
yeah.
the rest of the country, the rest of the 5 million in the country, are rural, mainly live in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly. And so
mm-hmm.
we're talking about the bulk of the people in this country who are living without light. The bulk
mm-hmm.
of the people in this country who are still illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
The bulk of the people in this country who have no access to internet. 3% of the country uses network. There's
mm-hmm.
no running water. There's no sewage system. We need roads. So if we're out there and we're talking about repatriation, we have to be thinking about development. Because
yeah.
we're always talking about how we're going to sustain ourselves when we go. You know,
mm-hmm.
we need to create the kind of companies that we can then get the governments to pay us to bring development to their communities. And
yeah.
that's what they're doing with China. That's what China's doing. China come and say, hey, man, look, we got a construction company. We can do your roads and your bridges. What you going to give us? And as simple as that. Now, how many black-owned construction companies do we have in the diaspora? How many?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can build our own roads all over Africa. There's no reason for us not to have better roads in Africa. The skills and the talent and the resources that are being basically deprived to Africa by those in the diaspora, I think that's really, like, a great sin. I think that's really a great sin, man, because people here don't have the same opportunity to develop or get access to what you got, and people out there actually take, you know, they take for granted. And then at the same hand, we like to point at Africa from the diaspora and say, well, why ain't they doing this? Why ain't they doing that? You ever thought that maybe sometimes they don't know how to do it, but you do? So why don't you come and show them? Why don't you come and educate? Why don't you come and teach? Bring your skill back. And so everything in Africa is not about how much money you got, man. Everything here is about relationships and being a good person. Doors open up not always by money, but, you know, the value of your character, you know, because if you're in a community where money is not, you know, nobody got money, then different values are able to emerge. You know,
uh-huh.
we end up valuing other things. It's like for people in prison. When people are in prison, they don't have money. But then they substitute with cigarettes. They substitute with commissary items.
Yeah.
You understand? It's the same way. So at the grassroots, we really could engage in barter and really develop this economy of bartering. community to community bartering. It doesn't even have to be money involved. Especially when we're looking at the way the world is going.
Yeah, so the first thing I'm hearing is to make sure that the community is sustainable, ensure, you know, a food security. So once you could come in and help with that, you know, start get things going. Building just basic social infrastructures to ensure that those are functioning properly. So I see where a lot of work that needs to be done. So anywhere that a lot of work that needs to be done, especially if it's with your brothers and sisters, it spells, you know, a lot of long-term opportunities for you. Once you come in from the diaspora with good intentions, your intentions are pure to uplift the lives of the people on the ground, then I think that that'll be a good outcome for yourself too, even more so.
Yeah, it's true, man. Let me tell you, man, Africa is for us.
Yes.
You know, it's for the Africans. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and as long as you come correct, just like when you were the diaspora, man, you were a shady dude and you got ulterior motives. You know, nobody going to deal with you. They're going to say, man, that dude's a snake.
You know what?
It's the
same
with over here, you know?
Let me just say what I really wanted to say a while ago. What I really wanted to say was, you know, we should stop looking for ready-done solutions. We should stop going to societies and countries where you're saying it looks pretty here, it's all built up and it's nice, I would live here. No. We should start looking for ready-made places and let's go build the place that we want. And that's what I wanted to say. We wish a lot more of our people would do that. Sierra Leone has its issues. Let's go fix those issues and be a part of that solution.
Absolutely. And then the thing about it is that, you know, we have so many people who's engaged in this repatriation right now who are not known but who are doing great work. People like, I can't say this brother's not known because he's really knocking them down in terms of repatriation. We have brother Rashad Maldi there in Senegal, man. He is really, you know, we got sisters like Juliet Blackfoot, you know, the Blackfoot family in Gambia and abroad. You know,
Gambia.
We got people like Dinah Samir, Search for You. You know, we got Sister Ya, you know, we got Sister Ya representing. And so we have individuals who actually have been doing the work and with the intentions of paving the way for others and genuine. And you know, we understand what it is that we have to do and how we have to approach the situation because of the experience. We're actually here with those intentions. And so I always say before you come back home and just come like a businessman, like a capitalist, we should come back and see how best we country see like that. And then on top of that, it's like we all have our own approaches and our own areas that we're operating in. I know Brother Rashad is helping people get land. He helping people with full repatriation. You see Sister Ya is running the dollar a month program. You know, these are dynamic expressions of how we can come together and repatriate. But far as us, the Gullah Redemption Mission in Sierra Leone, Basani, the different groups that are active here in Sierra Leone, our main goal is to approach it as many roots, one Fambo. When I say that, it means like as Pan-Africanists, in other words. So we may come from different roots. We may come from different sides, but it's only one family. You understand? It's one African family. So we say family first, Africa only. And at the end of the day, that's our approach here. That's how we approach it. That's how we live it. And so the people are open to this, especially the grassroots. The grassroots are ready. What you'll find sometimes is that when you come back on a legitimate mission, but you ain't got no money, and you go to the government, they're going to slam the door in your face and treat you like trash because you're not a rich black American. You know, you don't got millions. You know what I'm saying? You're just an ordinary. And so if you don't come back and connect with the grassroots and know how to survive without, you know, you're not going to be able to repatriate fully. And that's really what it is like, knowing how to survive without. And so, you know, it's good to have a business plan, but we got to have a development strategy too, because we need to know how to survive and live here and make the place better, especially if we plan to come here and live here. You know, it's just like It's just like when you rent an apartment. You don't just move in it. You go sage it. You go clean it. You go paint your walls. You know, you prepare the place before you go put your property in it. You don't want to make energy. It's the same thing coming back to Africa. Same thing coming back to Africa, man. We have to take our time. And then all of these are models. You know, our approach here can be duplicated anywhere. Rashad's approach in Senegal can be duplicated anywhere. Yah's approach in Ghana can be duplicated anywhere. So I'm confident that we're figuring this repatriation thing out. And there, I know there's so many other players in the game, so many other people that's playing a role. But these are just people who I know that are approaching it as organizers, as entrepreneurs, and really trying to empower the masses. And selflessly, I say selflessly because this is hard work. This is dangerous. Yes. And we don't get paid. Nobody says, hey, we need to support the repatriates. Let us put some money together to make sure that they're strong in Africa representing us. No one thinks about that. They got us out here struggling, and it's really misrepresented. You're not going through it yet, so you don't understand it yet. So these are some of the issues that the repatriates are able to share with those who are aspiring to come behind us. We have to report back to you guys. We have to be able to tell you some of the things to look out for, you know, the goods, the bads, and the ugly, you know what I'm saying? Not just a romanticized experience of repatriation, because it's not like that. Repatriation requires re-Africanization. That's a painful process when you're coming from America. We have to leave that European-ish at the door, leave it at the coastline. And, it's a process, bro. You know, culture shock is real. You know, all the food that's going to take to your belly right away.
Yeah, I think one of the main things I'd say for our people who are looking to, you know, come back and make an impact is that you have to think about, okay, how am I going to make a living? How am I going to sustain myself over the time period that I'm there trying to make an impact? So I think that's one of the things that's in the forefront of our minds that might lead us to think about, okay, what kind of business can I do? And I'm sure trying to make a living for yourself, you really do have good intentions for your community.
Yeah, but you know what, brother, let me tell you, right? Just to let you know, integration in turn the African-American into a capitalist in terms of values and worldview. And we're at conflict because that's not our traditional way. You know, we're traditionally communal. We're traditionally a cooperative system. We're traditionally investing together and building our own businesses. Traditionally, our grandparents did that. So when you see us, me, how I'm going to get a job, how am I going to survive, how am I going to work when repatriation is a collective thing. It's an exercise.
Collective.
It has to be organized.
Okay. Yeah,
So everyone is worrying about their own self, how they're going to survive. And nobody in Africa survives by themselves. Do you understand? And so this is not America. This is Africa. Mm-hmm. You have to think like a communal being. You have to say, how are we going to survive when I go back?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's the thing.
Yes.
We. Ubuntu.
Gotcha.
These capitalist values, you know, it's that individualism, it's that egoism, that sense of competition. Some people are coming back, bro. Some people are coming back just to bluff, you know, just to make a name on their friend.
And
I say that because, I mean, it's a hell of an experience. And I remember when I first came back, I was like, wow, man, Africa, oh, man, we all need this. So I know what them first few days is like. But living here is different. And it's just amazing to see people come for a weekend, come for 5 days, 10 days, and go back, and they got it all figured out. And I'd be like, wow, where did you stay while you was here? And it'd be like some touristy place. It wasn't with the people, they didn't eat none of the native foods, they ate in restaurants the whole time. I'm like, this is what y'all think repatriation is? This is what y'all think coming back is? And so, you know, we really have to be the ones to usher the people home, take you back home. You need family to come home. And so what I do think is that in America, we think about jobs. But in Africa, we need to think about land. We need to think about business. We need to think about cooperative enterprise when we come back to Africa. We need to click up or not do it at all. And I say that because I can just imagine what it's going to be like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, with kind of interest and the kind of people and the kind of momentum we got with even celebrities coming back. You know, all kind of people just, Africa is popping right now. Africa is popping. And even more so, coronavirus is making Africa pop even more. We want it even more now. You know? Eventually it's going to happen. Those of us who are here now, man, we're pioneers, man. We're paving the way for our generation.
There's a lot of us here in the diaspora. Yeah, there's a lot of us here in our diaspora, or just envying all of our brothers and sisters there now, because a lot of us had plans to travel this year. A lot of us had plans to travel in March. You know, a lot of people had plans to travel within the next couple of months, and all of that is thwarted now with this corona thing.
Hey, look, everybody here is hoping that it's over before December, because December is going to be lit. December is going to be lit in Sierra Leone. You know, we have a tour we're organizing. There's several other tours coming to Sierra Leone in December, hopefully, if this thing allows it to happen. And Sierra Leone is going to be lit because there were so many people who were supposed to be here in April and March, like you said, that are all saying December. And so it's going to be awesome, man. So, right now on the ground, we want to see how we can do an event to bring us all together at that time who's going to be around. So that way we're able to really, like, hold a conference for ourselves in Africa while we're all here at once. You know, we need to start doing that. You know, we really need to start utilizing Africa as our place to go and meet, our place to go and have a conference, you know, our place to go and retreat, you know. Even if we're still going to go back into Babylon and still the belly of the beast, you've got to have a place of retreat. You've got to have a place where you can go and cut your phone off and nobody in the world know where you're at. You need that's a necessity. Our ancestors didn't have that. You
Yeah, I like it. Now it's really
power-based. Yeah. Yeah, man. Modern day Maroonage.
Since you mentioned Maroon, because I've watched a couple videos that speak of and I've learned of the Maroons that migrated back from Jamaica throughout the 1700s, and they're living in Sierra Leone, Freetown specifically. And they're descendants of the Maroons from Jamaica. Have you gone to that little part of Freetown?
I've been to every part of Freetown. I lived on every side. The history of the Maroons here, it was that, so you understand, the first ever exodus, the first time any Africans from the diaspora ever returned to Africa with a plan to resettle was when the British anthropologists or abolitionists, they brought back a group of Africans from Britain, and they called them the British poor, the black poor, and they originally were from plantations in America, but during the American Revolution, the British loyalists took some of their quote unquote properties back to London. And they were set free there, but no one took care of them, so they became very poor and things like that. And so the philanthropic abolitionist society began, like, taking care of them because no one else was taking care of them. They just kind of, like, let them loose and treated them like varmint, you know. And so also at that same time with the American Revolution, you also had several outgoing branches of African-Americans. One group went to Nova Scotia, Canada. Others went down to Barbados, you know, Bahamas. People went to different places. So there was this explosion, this breaking off of the enslaved African American population. And so the ones who went, the ones who went to Britain, they came back in 1787, and they formed, they founded what was called the Province of Freedom, and that was here in Freetown. It was the first settlement. Ultimately, it was burned down, and it was a failure. But in 1792, a group of 1,200 African Americans, and I might as well just say it, majority were delegates, majority was from South Carolina, Georgia area, and as well as Virginia as well, the Chesapeake area, and they was 1/3 of the population that had been evacuated to Nova Scotia, Canada. They came back under the leadership of the founder of Freetown, an African man who was enslaved last in Wilmington, North Carolina. His name was Thomas Peters. He's known as the father, founding father of Freetown. When he came, the people who the 50 people who had survived the original settlement of 411 people, they joined with the new group, and then Freetown was born. So Freetown was birthed by African Americans who came back by way of Nova Scotia and Britain, because they were evacuated by British Loyalist forces. And so that's how Freetown came about. It was supposed to be a place where Africans who have been turned free could go and resettle and live free. And so the Jamaica Maroons came around 1800, in the year 1800. So from 1792 to 1800, a lot of things happened. And at the time when the Jamaica Maroons came, there actually was what they call the Timney Nova Scotia Rebellion. They was rebelling against the Sierra Leone Company. The people who brought them back formed a company called the Sierra Leone Company. And then the Sierra Leone Company was created to govern what they called the Sierra Leone Colony. And then Freetown was established within the Sierra Leone Colony. So that meant basically that the white people who brought the Africans back then governed them through a company called the Sierra Leone Company. You understand? And so Sierra Leone and Freetown is not necessarily the same thing historically in terms of governance originally. And so what happened was the indigenous, who were mainly Timini and the Nova Scotians, who were the founders of Freetown, along with the black poor, they were in open rebellion. They were fighting the British. They were fighting the Sierra Leone Company, and it almost overwhelmed them. They had to call for they had to call for backup from other British, the British Navy. That we almost overwhelmed them and drove the colonizers out instantly. And what happened was they had the British had been fighting a war in Jamaica against the Maroons, and then they forcefully evacuated some of them to Nova Scotia. Yeah. And the ones that was in Nova Scotia, they was like, "Yo, get us out of here, man! Why? You know, they stole them, and they were like, "Well, we'll take you back to Africa." When they brought them back to Africa, they brought them back on a mission, and the mission that they was on was to function as like a mercenary group for the British Sierra Leone Company, and they actually played a military role in suppressing the anti-colonial rebellion of the Timney and the Nova Scotians. That was 1800. Ultimately, they were settled in different parts, and I believe the oldest church in Freetown is the Maroon Church. And there's still Maroon descendants walking around. I've met people who say, "Yeah, I've got Maroon descendants, ancestry." I got a friend who definitely has Maroon ancestry. So it's pretty common. You know, people here really know about the Maroon connection. Sierra Leone feels like Jamaica. Sierra Leone feels like Jamaica. And Freetown is on a mountainous peninsula. So it feels like an island. It feels like an island. Freetown feels like an island. It doesn't feel like a mainland country, mainland place. And so, you know, the Maroon influence is very deep there. People love the culture, and people here in the Jamaican community who are very conscious have always known about that. And there was people who came back from Barbados, the Bahamas, Trinidad. There was other people who came back from directly from America later on. You know, there wouldn't have been any such thing as a Monrovia or Liberia if there wasn't already a Freetown in place. So I say all that to tell you that Freetown is the first settlement of repatriated African Americans ever in history. That's what Freetown is. We call this the birthplace of Pan-Africanism, because after the Maroons came in 1708, the British outlawed the slave trade. I'm sorry, 1808, and then they began to basically attack ships that were going across the water with enslaved Africans. And so when they would capture these ships, they would take the Africans and they wouldn't take them back to where they to where they came from. They would bring them to Freetown, or they would take them to Liberia later on. And so something happened on the continent that didn't happen in other places, where you have these creolized community being formed out of Africans from America, from the Caribbean, and from Africa in one city. And so the group that they, the ethnic group that they ultimately comprise is the Creole ethnic group. And I'm telling you, man, like the Creole ethnic group and the Gullah-Geechee ethnic group are like cousins, twin brothers, twin sisters. They're so, they look so much alike. The people look alike. The culture is so much similar. And so the language is so much similar. And so at the end of the day, that's how Freetown came about. And that's how the Creole community came about. It came about as a consequence.
Seems to have lost Chief Foley.
Although under a colonial circumstance.
So you're cutting out a little bit, but we have about 3 more minutes left on the show, so I'm gonna give you a chance to just put in your closing remarks. Since you have about 3 more minutes in the show, so I'm gonna give you a chance to go ahead and give us your closing remarks. And I want to reiterate most of the stuff that we talk about is, you know, hoping that our brothers and sisters here on the diaspora could, you know, visit and migrate to the Freetown, Sierra Leone area. There's lots of work to be done on the ground. Chief Foda is doing a lot of that work, and he'll be able to guide you on what needs to be done there and how can you could play a pivotal role in that. So Chief, I'm just going to give you some time to give you a closing remarks and go ahead and wrap it up.
Okay, no doubt, man. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. Our pleasure, man. Okay, it seems his phone is cutting off. So we'll see if he's able to get back on. Yeah, go ahead.
That phone. And I just wanted to give
Okay, so your phone is cutting out real bad. Maybe if you just hang up and call back real quick, so we could get your final words. Again, we want to, you know, remind our people here listening to the program about all the work that needs to be done, you know, in ensuring food safety, food security, building up the facilities. You mentioned some work that needs to be done with the school. So the more of us that could do pitching and do something, you know, contribute to the GoFundMe that I'll share in the show notes, the better it'll be for all of us to see your impact in the lives of our brothers and sisters. You're doing good for yourself. It'll be a good look on the community, and we can't stress that enough. We need more of our people doing more work. If you're not there on the ground to do anything, you know, you could really contribute to the GoFundMe. And if that's the least you could do until you visit and you're able to go there, hey, you know, chip in, contribute to the GoFundMe, and I'll definitely put that link within the show notes. Let me go ahead and update that right now. Let's see if the chief is able to join us to give his closing remarks. Okay. Let me go ahead and put the GoFundMe information. Okay, let me go ahead and update this information. Okay, so The chief mentioned all the work that needs to be done. I've added the GoFundMe information to the show notes. So I want to thank you for always listening and tuning in. We had a little issues with the connection in the last. Chief wasn't able to get his closing words in. We'll be able to, anything that he shares with us, we'll be able to share with our community. Anything, do contribute to the GoFundMe. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and he's there on the ground doing it. The least we could do is chip in and do something. Check out his website, gulladugu.com, which is GullahDugu.com. We could get more information on all the work that he's doing there. We're going to go ahead and I'll close out. I want to thank you for always listening. And as always, visit SankofaRepat.com and check out information on our program there and what the Sankofa Repatriation Assistance Program is doing. And do consider to also donate at least $1 per month. So the chief share with me his email, his website to share with you. Gullah, GullahDugu@gmail.com is his email if you want to get in touch to help with all the projects that he's doing there. I want to thank you for listening and have a good day.